everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you are listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life. Because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. The new issue is out. It features an interview with me, actually, a conversation I have with Brian Mercer about the nature of confidence. It's called a Confidence Masterclass, and you can find that at authormagazine.org. And as a matter of fact, I will be teaching a class in confidence at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association's Summer Writers Conference, because Author Magazine is funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, which has been supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. That conference, where I'll be teaching a masterclass on Sundays from July 16th to 19th. Again, that's July 16th to 19th. It's going to feature that class. It's going to feature a lot of great classes, 20 agents, 10 to 12 editors. The wonderful Andre Debuse as a keynote speaker. It should be just awesome. If you want to learn about the PNWA's summer conference, go to pnwa.org. Well, today's guest, I hope, is Dr. Amit Goswami, a theoretical physicist and author. Theoretical physics, or quantum physics, is a little different than the Newtonian physics that I studied in high school, which treats the universe as a machine, essentially, a giant machine where one thing causes another, causes another, causes another, causes another. It's a giant mechanistic machine. But quantum physics, as I have come to understand it, is the physics of the teeny tiny, the universe broken down into its very smallest pieces. And in quantum physics, the universe is made up of just potential that is either acted upon or not acted upon. So today we have the potential to talk to Dr. Amit Goswami, but I don't know if it's going to happen. He is yet to call in. I must assume that he is doing something very important, as only a theoretical physicist would. But I will say I was very drawn to, I was first drawn to theoretical physics in a way when I interviewed Gary Zukav, who wrote the book The Dancing Woolly Masters. Long time. When did he write that? And that was, I think, in the late 80s, maybe the mid 80s. The Dancing Woolly Masters, which looked at the breakthroughs in science and physics and how these breakthroughs related to a new look at what it was to be alive and what life is and what it wasn't. And there's been a lot more work in this way of looking at what physics says, not just about how to make things work and how to blow things up and how to build things, but also what the universe is really made of and what role what we call consciousness plays in that universe. You know, and to me, this is an easy step to make, because as a writer, the idea of a universe, of a mechanistic universe, that is one thing always being caused mechanically by another, has in a way never made sense to me, because I sit at my desk and I create a sort of open space in my consciousness and I invite something new into it. Without the new thought, without the new idea, without that expanded new thought, nothing can really happen. The writer, the creator, needs to invite in new thought, and I have never treated it as my brain simply firing along its neutrons. I've always felt as though I am in the process of receiving something, like an antenna tuned to the right station. It kind of defies a mechanistic view of the world, but the mechanistic view of the world does not make sense with my experience of being a creative person, or really, for that matter, just a human being. So I love the development in science that's been going on in quantum physics. I love it when science catches up to intuition. I guess you could say. And I would love to talk to Dr. Goswami about this. He may, however, not be with us today. That is a shame. But and I apologize to my listeners because this has been happening a few times lately. But I just must believe that there is a purpose for everything, even this. I hope to have – I will say this. Next, we were going to talk about his book Quantum Economics. He had written a book last year called Quantum Creativity. I was going to talk to him about that one too, but he got ill, and so I wasn't able to do it. But he's back on his feet and written another book. And this one is about the power of quantum theory as applied to economics. I will actually be talking on Thursday evening, 4 p.m. Pacific time and 7 p.m. Eastern time, to Richard Thaler, who's the author of Misbehaving. He's also author of the best-selling book on economics called Nudge. Now, why the interest in economics? It's pure coincidence, I assure you. But I would not have normally interviewed an economist because it's just not my thang. But the book Thaler has written looks at how economists, perhaps a lot of economic theory doesn't make sense because it chooses not to treat human beings as humans, who make strange decisions that aren't often logical in the purely numeric sense. And it's just a fascinating book, very funny, and I think full of insight about just what it means to be human and how we make decisions and how we don't make decisions. So I look forward to talking to him. I'm going to give Mr. Goswami just another minute or two to see if he can find his phone, but if he can't, so be it. Life goes on. I will talk to him at another time. I'll talk to him at another time about what it is to – you know what I love about – actually, you know what I do love about quantum physics and what sort of – it's so theoretical. It's hard to view life this way as simply that all of matter, all of the universe is just potential that is summoned forth with choice. But to me – And I know that as I say this about the physical world, about like the trees and the plants and the oceans and the globe, it conceptually it's hard to get my mind around. But if I think about my own life, what is our life? And for sure this is true of writers, because think about your life as a writer. Think about the blank page. There's nothing there. The page is just blank potential until you make a choice. A choice, in this case, in the form of a word, and then another word, and then another word, and then another word. There is only the choices you make. We are making choices so constantly we don't even recognize them. But the thing I love about writing, which to me has always been the act of creating things on purpose, the thing I love about writing is that you have to become conscious of the choices you are making, because no one can make them for you, and the page is not going to fill itself by itself. You have to make a choice. And quantum physics, as I have come to understand it, has a lot to do with just that choice, that when you choose something, the potential forms and manifests. And it's true of everything we do in our life. We make a choice. We go left instead of right. We get married or not. We make a baby or not. We have birthday cake or we don't. Everything's a choice. And every time we make a choice, something happens. And so whether we talk to Dr. Goswami or not today, I encourage you to pay attention to the choices you're making. Understand that everything you do is a choice. Nothing is just, you aren't a machine just ticking your way along until the grave. You're not just a giant Newtonian coil unfurling until you're in heaven. Oh, wait a minute. This is either, well, let's see who's come to join us. Maybe, hello, who am I talking to?
Hello, this is Amit Goswami.
Oh, you made it. I talked as long as I could. And I'm so glad you're with me. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm glad to get hold of you, too. It was very embarrassing because I was looking for your phone number and couldn't find
it. Well, you know, the good news there, Dr. Goswami, is that I can talk forever. And so I was able to delay, and now you're here, and that is just awesome. Okay, I'm going to extend our show just a few minutes so we have plenty of time. All right, so I'm talking now, as I had hoped, to Dr. Amit Goswami, author of Quantum Economics, and start here. I've been talking a bit about the difference between Newtonian physics and quantum physics or theoretical physics. And as I understand it, Newtonian physics, which is what I study in high school, deals with the universe sort of mechanistically, whereas quantum physics, which is the physics of the teeny tiniest parts of the universe, draws different conclusions about how life works. Is that a fair assessment, a fair differentiation?
Well, yes, but the most important way to understand this is also very relevant. Newtonian physics says that the world consists of only one real space-time, matter moving in space-time, whereas quantum physics from the beginning is telling us, no, there are two domains of reality. One is domain of potentiality, where communication is instantaneous, and the other is domain of space-time, where communication is limited with signals and always a finite time is involved. And this makes all the revolutionary differences that you defined in the first definition, which is good, which is good.
And so you talk about potential, and whenever I read this description of the two fields, the sort of physical field and the field of potential, I think, because this is how I think, of the writing process, where I have this blank page, and it is filled because of the choices I make. And the choices are sort of a summoning of these, of thought and focus and intention that eventually manifests in the form of sentences, words, and pages. Is that a useful parallel to draw?
Certainly. The choices is what makes the transition from the potentiality to the actuality. However, you have to be a little bit careful. The choices we make consciously, they are choices based on our memory. But then choices that we make when we are creative, those are the real original choices we make, and that's when we touch the domain of new potentiality.
So there's choices made from memory, and then there's expanded choices, which are the sort of evolutionary choices that expand the reality. Am I following you? Yes?
Excellent way of putting it. That's
okay.
A new way of putting
yes.
it. Also the evolutionary choices, because that's what evolves the universe. Otherwise, the
yeah.
universe just goes on basis of memory, which repetition of the past.
That's right. In fact, when I teach writing, I say, I teach writing as not thinking, but listening, because we ask a question, what do I want to say? And because we're asking for something new, the only thing we have is old thought, and the only way to get new thought is to ask a question and receive the answer, and now we have something new as opposed just to the old things that we rewrite and rewrite and rewrite. It's the same thing.
And you were raising an excellent question. Even the author of the question has to listen for the answer, because you are listening from your own deeper level of consciousness, and you don't know what will come.
Right.
So that listening prepares us from receiving the completely new answers that are often necessary if our questions are really deep questions.
I know, you know why this is hard for a lot of people, Amit? Because it makes, I think, and one of the reasons, one of the things I encounter when I try and teach writing is it requires an act of trust. Because in the mechanistic view, it's sort of like I'm just going to chop the wood, hammer the nails, and I'm going to build this thing with my muscle and my determination and my skill and my craft. But the creative thought requires an act of, I trust that it will come. I've asked this question, and now this thing that I don't have complete control over, like I do over a saw or a hammer, is going to bring something to me. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. And,
yeah.
Okay. And that is the problem. Why some people just cannot get into creativity.
Yeah, they don't. And, you know, it strikes me as I was reading quantum economics, and part of what you're having to deal with is the sort of argument between the mechanistic view of the universe and what I'll call the quantum or the conscious view of the universe. And it seems to me, when I picture this debate, it's like a river that way, way back splits, and if you see the world as mechanistic, you're going to go a totally different intellectual route. Whereas if you see it consciously or intentionally, or we'll call it consciously, you're going to go another route. And sometimes the people at the two ends of the rivers are shouting across from vast intellectual differences. Do you go through that in the
yes.
world of science?
Yes, that is definitely true. And what is more tragic about the world of science now is that science began with a tremendous openness and progressivity, that we will not succumb to belief system that is going to limit us.
Right.
And then, so quickly we got into a situation where we became bound by the idea that it's all determined, mechanistically determined, and we are machines, and therefore we can't really delve into something that is really new. And we imposed enormous loss of freedom upon us, completely unnecessarily. And more, all this was done because these scientists, the establishment scientists, they are so gung-ho about maintaining their control on things. You know, they have created a new elitism, the elitism of the academe, who determines everything in America, especially, but more or less all over the world. And that is very sad because this control is not part of the law of science, part of the law of the way the universe works. And therefore, it's taking us astray, it's giving us problems, and it's really as destructive now as the religious worldview was, because
that's right.
The same kind of dogma is ruining our life, controlling our life.
Yeah, you know, I think you hit the nose on the head with the religion. I think my friends who are very interested in science are so terrified if any scientific thought begins in any way to bleed over into the realm that used to be owned only by the traditional religions, I think they fear that they're giving up, that the next thing they know they're going to be having to listen to the Pope or something. You know, I think that there's a fear like it's an all or nothing thing, that you've got to keep this absolute divide between anything that smacks even vaguely of life after death or intuition or anything like that, or else it's the baby in the bathwater.
Yeah, but it's ironic, though, that we struggle so hard to come out of one dogmatic authoritative system and now fallen into another dogmatic authoritative system.
I just saw my brother today in California, and he said, in the absence of a dictatorship, we will create our own. I think it's we and I think
we
you might be right.
We cannot live without dictatorship.
Yeah.
I think, all right.
Go ahead, me. No, you go ahead. You're my guest.
I was going to say that there is the third possibility, quantum worldview, and I think that we can live in the uncertainty that quantum worldview creates. I mean, it does create uncertainty. It does create creative anxiety. But as research after research has shown, there are two kinds of anxiety. Anxiety about things that are determined actually makes us more harmfully anxious. On the other hand, if it is anxiety of creativity, it's actually good for us.
Oh, explain the anxiety of creativity. I want to hear about that.
Well, what happens is that this uncertainty that you cannot control, this trust that you are mentioning, it also makes us anxious.
Yeah.
Will it really come true, or should I depend on the controls that I know? And many people succumb to the anxiety and avoid it and therefore not get into creativity. But research after research is showing that creative anxiety is even good for our health. It really is.
Ha! Oh, excellent. Well, you know, to write, you know, if writing, of course, is a creative act. And one of the first things I teach my students is you've got to stop thinking about the future and put your attention in the here and now, because that's where creation happens. The future will happen. But if you sit here and say, I can't write this book until I know it succeeds, you'll never write it.
Right.
And so much of our anxiety, and whether you think you live in a Newtonian universe or a conscious universe, you don't know what the future holds. You've got no idea. You don't know.
Exactly.
How can you?
That you don't know is a freedom, whereas I know it's control, but with control, creativity doesn't come. Creativity is about freedom. So why do we want so much freedom on one hand, and then we want to control the very freedom? This is ridiculous.
It freedom scares us, Amit, because it means we're responsible. It means we have to make the choice. It's up to us. No thing is going to do it for us. And we love
that's
it.
Right.
And then
if I make the choices and I become creative, then the product is my responsibility too, and that's what scares
that's
people.
Right.
Do I know enough about what is right, morality, you know, those ethical questions come up, and that scares people. But all this is solved by just staying and developing what we call a little bit of endurance and a little bit of tenacity, and just stay relying on our intuition. The intuitive part of ourselves has built into it an access to a world that's truly amazing, that answers not only our creative questions, but questions of ethics as well. So if people have ethical problem with, am I capable of taking responsibility for my products, don't be concerned, because ethics is included in the archetypal domain. The same archetype that's giving you creativity will give you ethics.
Yeah. And do you think, I feel this is true of me, that what we call intuition is in some ways not unlike a muscle, in that if you become deliberate about it, you can start using it more consciously and receive even more information from what feels capricious, but in my experience, increasingly, is more something that I can rely on.
Absolutely. You can rely on. Only thing is that you have to develop a bit of sensitivity. Sensitivity to the body tells a lot, because intuitions come not only with a thought, but also with a feeling. And people who miss the feeling, they never get the certainty of intuition. And mind creates a lot of equivocalness. That inequivocal feeling, gut feeling, that has to come. So that is the only requirement, that you develop a sensitivity to the body where feelings are felt, not with the help of the mind, but feelings alone. And that gut feeling, or the feeling in the heart that this is right, that is important for moving in the intuitive world, and moving in
Absolutely.
The world of uncertainty too.
That's right. One of my favorite writer teachers is André Dubuis, and he said that he learned to write when he stopped writing with his mind and he started writing with his body. And I know exactly what he means, that most of the writing occurs, most of what tells me whether I've written what I feel is the right word or the wrong word and so on, occurs within my body and not within what I think of as my mind. All right, so Amit, you've written, so quantum economics, you've taken the concept of a conscious universe, and you said, what happens when we apply it to economics? Because you feel it's been missing from economics up to this point. Is that so?
Yes. Economics has been totally concerned only with the material sector of our experience, but our experience and our satisfaction, our needs, also extend to the feeling, thinking, and the value, archetypal dimension, love, beauty, justice, and all those stuff. So why can't those things be made the subject of economic development, economic production and consumption? In fact, what I show in the book, that if we include the subtle in the economics, with a lot of ingenuity, of course, but we now have that ability. We can make subtle products. We can even make vital energy industry practically. I mean, we can literally revolutionize the field of economics completely by including the subtle. And then we solve our problems. We solve the problem of a business cycle, these ups and downs, insertion and recession. We solve the problem of sustainability. We solve the problem of even the problem of poverty. This kind of stuff that happened with Great Recession or in the 30s with the Great Depression will never happen again. So it really is a solution to many of our very stubborn economic problems.
And so you use a word that is interesting. You talk about the subtle, and by that you're talking about the world of the what I would call the non-physical, the emotions, intuition.
Yes, non-physical. And thoughts. Emotions meaning feelings. The feeling plus thought is called emotion. So feeling, thought, and the archetypes. You know, Nikola Tesla, the great physicist, once said that when science will be able to include the subtle in its territory, then the progress of the world that was accomplished in thousands of years before would be accomplished within like a week.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So,
the subtle.
He already anticipated.
One thing I've come to understand with from the world of writing is, and I tell my students this all the time, that as a writer, as a narrative writer, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, my currency is feeling. I'm selling a felt experience of life. It doesn't matter that it is raining in my story. What does it feel like when it's raining? Because my characters, as a human being, it seems to me, in my experience, after my 50 years of being human, the only thing I want is to feel good, to feel happy. I want to feel happy and not sad. I want to feel safe and not afraid. I want to feel excited and not bored. How we feel is our experience. It's everything. And what you feel, I feel, will be different.
Yes, that is being human, and that is the thing. You know, by the mechanistic view, humanity is not included. Humanity is about feeling and intuiting much more than thinking. Yes, thinking is how we express ourselves, of course. Eventually, thought is our expression, so we must not forget the importance of thought. But literally, we cannot live with just thought. If we didn't feel the universe, life would be extremely different, and life would be so drab. I mean, I cannot even imagine.
No,
really,
no,
how
you
life
can't.
Would be for a machine.
I don't. I know. I don't think you. I cannot imagine being human. I mean, I cannot differentiate my felt experience of life. In fact, I think I heard Deepak Chopra say that once, that he said, life isn't known, it's felt. It's not known, I guess, in the intellectual. It's a felt experience.
It is a felt experience, and that is the crucial thing. So by eliminating our humanness, when we say machine, what the people have in mind is a thinking computer. But a thinking computer does not have any self-experience, and therefore it doesn't need to feel, because it doesn't
experience itself.
It really does not experience the world. So, of course, in quantum physics, such a thinking machine would just be a potential machine, but it would never have any experience, and therefore the manifest world will never be experienced by this machine. So, you know, the scientific materialists just don't think through what their models imply using quantum physics. If they did for a moment, then they would immediately see that the mechanical picture of the universe just falls apart. And what I'm saying now is that all our economic difficulties also come from relying on the mechanical picture too much. Because, for example, we have created the illusion that we can infinitely expand economy and come out of the economic recession by expansion philosophy. But we can't, because the resources are limited. We can't, because the material consumption pollutes the world. So these limits just didn't occur to us. And of course, Adam Smith developed all this in the 18th century. Nobody expected these problems to occur then. But now they are serious problems.
Right. Right. And for you, you say that the answer lies not in numbers, but if you're going to develop economic theory, you must include what human beings actually are, as opposed to what we want them to be. Well, this is just what Richard Thaler is talking about. I'm going to talk to him about in 2 days. He said all of economic theory is based on human beings being completely rational, like little number lovers, which, of course, we're not.
That is the mistake. Human beings are not rational. So, you know, I mean, we just had the death of a great man, you know, who went schizophrenic but got the Nobel Prize anyway. Nash, and of course his game theory, and he was given a Nobel Prize, and that's fine. I mean, I admire the man because, in spite of his schizophrenic difficulties, he did what he did. But the point is that the game theory approach to economics it just doesn't work. It's not enough, because we cannot include feelings in game theory. It's bound to fail. So we gave a Nobel Prize to a great man, and I don't begrudge it. But we should not get the impression, just because game theory got a Nobel Prize, game theory applies to economics. We just have to assume that he was given Nobel Prize for his brilliance in mathematics in the pretext of economics. Like Bertrand Russell was given a Nobel Prize in philosophy, but he really got the Nobel Prize for his mathematical work. And that is okay.
Right. You know what's interesting about economics, and I've read more about economics in the last month than I have in my entire life. So I'm new to this, but as I began reading about it, I thought all economics would be flipped on its head if people weren't afraid of death. That so much of economic theory is based on a fear, that the assumption that nobody ever wants to die ever, that the ultimate value is in staying alive as long as possible, and that human beings will do everything possible to avoid that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
And this is the lure forever. Just if you have any kind of fear, including the fear of death, even to your last day, just go to the store and buy something new, and that's enough for you to
right.
get a boost.
Take care of
but
it.
There are other products which you should make available, which will give the emotional boost much easier, much less expense to the environment, much less expense to the limitations of the finiteness of the products, and this is what quantum economics accomplishes. It does not mind the fact that, yes, economics and economic consumption is important, but why not make consumption of those stuff which you really, really need, like values, like meaning. I just came back from Spain giving a lecture at a conference, and I was very amazed by the fact that part of the reason that many unemployment is so prevalent among the youth of Spain is that the young people don't want to do meaningless jobs. Young people want
right.
meaningful jobs. The same kind of thing happened during the Great Recession in America. Columnists have commented on it, that people are not taking meaningless jobs, which were available even in the depth of recession time. But people were not taking those jobs. Instead, they held back because they really wanted to do meaningful jobs, which disappeared for a while. And this was contributing to the recession.
Wow. Dr. Goswami, this is a fabulous conversation that I have to draw to a close. I would love to talk to you some more. Let me ask you this. I usually ask my authors that I interview, I'm going to ask you also, because you've written so many books. All right, why not? Finish this sentence for me. Are you ready? I'm sure you are. If writing has taught me anything, writing, of all the writing you've done, and you've done a lot, if writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what?
If writing has taught me anything, it taught me that it is important to live in the flow. Live in the flow.
Live in the flow.
Yes, live in the flow. Writing is when my greatest moments of happiness comes, because it allows me simultaneously the knowledge base that I have, that I call my ego, and the creativity that I get because I rely on my quantum self for the intuitive level of reality.
Oh, I agree 100%. Amit, yes, the flow. What a great answer. Well, listen, the book is Quantum Economics. Available where all fine books are sold. Are you going to be talking on radio and going around the country a little bit to talk to people about this book?
For the next 6 months, yes, definitely.
Excellent. All right. Well, people can find out about it by going to your website. And, best of luck, Dr. Goswami. It's been just a pleasure talking
Bill,
to
could
you.
Could you mention the website maybe, amitgoswami.org?
Yes, amitgoswami.org. That's .org, folks, .org. And you can find out all you need to know about Dr. Goswami there. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, take it easy. Get into the flow, people. It's true. That's where it all happens. All right, next week. Oh, this Thursday. Like I said, this Thursday, I'll be talking to Richard Thaler, the economist, about misbehaving. And then I'll be off next Tuesday, but then back again with Mark Allen, publisher for New World Library. Until then, well, you know what you got to do. Get into the flow and do something you love.